From the business desk at State Broadcast News, this is the CRE News Hour. I'm Steve Lubetkin. It's Friday, November 8th, 2019. In this episode of the CRE News Hour, we'll speak with Matt Harding and Melissa Sievright of retail shopping center firm Levin Management about their pre-holiday survey of retail sentiment. And we'll have a conversation with Jim Berry, leader of Deloitte's U.S. real estate practice, about the firm's 2020 commercial real estate outlook. We'll be back with the top CRE news stories right after these messages.
Turn your podcasting passion into profits. The book, The Business of Podcasting, describes the business side of podcasting, including how to become a professional podcaster. You'll learn about positioning your clients' expertise through podcasting, too, plus the best business models, how to find clients, and much more. Visit thebusinessofpodcasting.com.
Today, you can't wait for the media to cover your company. You have to be the media. Take advantage of the power of audio and video. It's the best way to showcase your expertise to prospective customers. Let the Lubetkin Media Companies handle the technical side. We're award-winning audio and video producers. We can help you produce podcasts and video programs remotely or in our fully equipped studio in Cherry Hill. Visit beingthemedia.com for more information. Thanks for joining us on the CRE News Hour. We'd just like to make note of a new option on the show page for this episode. You can click on the purple Take the Survey button right below the podcast player and share some information that will help us get to know our audience better. We'd also appreciate your considering financial support for the CRE News Hour by visiting our Patreon link and becoming a show supporter. You can also leave a tip in the tip jar by clicking the blue quid button right in the middle of the podcast episode page. And if you're interested in becoming a sponsor of the CRE News Hour, write to me at steve@statebroadcastnews.com and we'll send you the rate card for advertising and commercials. Now let's take a look at some of the stories that are moving CRE markets across the country. October was a good month for jobs. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says total non-farm payroll employment rose by 128,000 in October, and the unemployment rate was little changed at 3.6%. Doug Duncan, chief economist at Fannie Mae, has more perspective on the jobs report.
The October jobs report came in relatively strong, especially since it included significant but temporary job losses from the recently resolved GM-UAW strike, as well as layoffs of temporary census workers. Non-farm payrolls increased by 128,000 in October, a figure that included net losses of 42,000 for motor vehicles and parts manufacturing. We expect the motor vehicles sector to show a corresponding rebound in employment next month. In addition, job gains for the prior 2 months were revised upward by a total of 95,000, another positive for the labor market. The average work week held steady, and average hourly earnings growth was unchanged at 3% year over year, which should offset concerns of weakening personal income growth. In the household survey, the unemployment rate ticked up 1/10 this month, but remains at historically low levels, and labor force participation increased as well, indicating workers are continuing to return from the sidelines. Based on this report, the Fed should be comfortable with its tone at the recent FOMC meeting, in which it implied a more muted appetite for future rate cuts.
Manhattan ranks among the greenest cities in the country, according to the annual Office Green Building Adoption Index and inaugural Multifamily Green Building Adoption Index by CBRE, Maastricht University, and the University of Guelph, ranking 7th and 10th, respectively. According to the report, Manhattan became greener over the past year, with 35% of its office space now green certified. That's up from 31.75% in 2018. Currently, the market boasts 267 green certified office buildings out of an inventory totaling 788 properties. The 2019 Green Building Adoption Index found green certified office space across America's 30 largest office markets has reached 42.2%. That's up from 41.9% last year and marks a new high. Chicago took the top spot in the Green Building Adoption Index for the third straight year, with 71% of its space green certified. The Multifamily Green Building Adoption Index found that, while it's still in the early stages, 3.3% of all multifamily apartment units in the top 30 markets have been green certified. According to the index, Manhattan ranked 10th with 3.5%, or about 11,000 of its multifamily apartment units, green certified. Along these lines, the American Institute of Architects is criticizing the decision by President Trump to officially withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord. AIA President William Bates called the decision short-sighted and says the economic impact to the United States as a participant in the Paris Agreement is a fraction of the toll we'll pay if we do not make climate action a top priority as a nation. In September, the AIA expanded its efforts to drive climate action and issued a declaration called Where We Stand, Climate Action. Rockefeller Group and joint venture partner PCCP say that SHI International, one of America's top 10 largest IT solutions providers, has purchased a 400,000-square-foot building in Rockefeller Group Logistics Center for $59.5 million. SHI will use the building primarily for IT configuration. The building was developed specifically for an IT tenant. It features 36-foot clear ceiling heights, an 8,000-amp primary service connection, including a full building backup generator, a chiller plant for tenant data software equipment, a steel platform mezzanine for specialized mechanical, electrical, and plumbing equipment to support SHI's data operation, and increased roof load to accommodate a solar rooftop application. The building's located at 400 Ridge Road in Piscataway, New Jersey. JLL's Hotels and Hospitality Practice says the firm advised on the sale of the St. Regis, New York, on behalf of Marriott International. Qatar Investment Authority purchased the 238-key property for $310 million. It's subject to a long-term management agreement. The St. Regis, New York, is located in Manhattan's Midtown East submarket overlooking Fifth Avenue. The property holds Forbes 5-star and AAA 5-diamond ratings. Amenities include the Esther Court Restaurant and King Cole Bar, and nearly 14,000 square feet of meeting and event space. Ashkenazi Acquisition Corp's added Vernon Hills Shopping Center in Eastchester, New York, to its diversified portfolio. The acquisition was orchestrated by Cushman & Wakefield. The New York-based private real estate investment firm purchased the 5-building Westchester County asset at a cost exceeding $125 million from Vernon Hills Shopping Center, LLC. The market-leading mixed-use property totals more than 380,000 square feet. It's just 5 miles from the central business district of White Plains and features a mix of retail, medical, and professional credit tenants. The property's notable retailers include Starbucks, New York Sports Club, Barnes & Noble, Gap, American Eagle, Brooks Brothers, and West Elm, among others. Its medical presence is expanding significantly because of high demand in the local market. Major tenants include Lawrence Hospital and its affiliated New York Presbyterian and Columbia Medical Practices. Mesa West Capital's provided financing for the acquisition of a multifamily project in Henderson, Nevada, and the construction of a Class A office tower in suburban Philadelphia. The separate loans total about $117.4 million. A joint venture of an affiliate of American Real Estate Partners and developer Oliver Tyrone Pulver Corp. has received a $76.5 million loan from West Mesa for the construction of Seven Tower Bridge. That's the 260,000-square-foot Class A office building in Conshohocken, a suburb of Philadelphia about 10 miles northwest of the city. Seven Tower Bridge is the last in a series of buildings developed by OTPC and its affiliates within the 45-acre, 1.4 million-square-foot master-planned mixed-use Tower Bridge development. It's the first new office project in Conshohocken since 2002. Strategic Funding Alternatives, a privately held commercial real estate firm, announced the acquisition of Woodland Falls Corporate Center, on Lake Drive East and Route 38 in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, our hometown. Located on 17 acres, the three-building complex combines for a total of about 218,000 square feet of Class A office space. The corporate park currently boasts an occupancy of 97%. It's home to tenants that include PNC Bank, CoreCentric, the law firm Ballard Spahr, First Colonial Community Bank, and M&T Bank. Affiliates of Endurance Real Estate Group and Center Square Investment Management have signed a 243,000-square-foot lease with Progressive Converting at 594 Can-Do Expressway in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. The property was recently purchased from Quad Graphics and rebranded as 594 Distribution Center. The lease increases the property's occupancy to 100%. An 86-acre infill development site's come online for sale in eastern Morris County, New Jersey. Cushman & Wakefield is hawking the property at 85 Whippany Road in Whippany. That's part of a 194-acre former Alcatel-Lucent site that's undergone a highly successful redevelopment. The rest of the campus today houses Bayer's North American headquarters and MetLife Investments global headquarters. Cushman & Wakefield's New Jersey capital markets team is marketing the opportunity on behalf of Bayer, which is selling. It's currently zoned for professional office, research laboratories, state-licensed hospitals and nursing homes, child care centers, and more. Fairstead and Meadow Partners have acquired the Chocolate Factory Lofts, a 125-unit converted factory at 275 Park Avenue in Brooklyn. The selling price was $67.25 million. The former Tootsie Roll factory spans the entire southern-facing side of Park Avenue, and it's about a block from the Brooklyn Navy Yard and the new Wegmans flagship location. TerraCap Management, a privately held investment firm headquartered in Estero, Florida, has acquired CenterPoint Office Center 1 and 2 in Denver, Colorado for $77.5 million. The acquisition consists of two multi-story office buildings totaling 374,000 rentable square feet. The property is in the heart of Denver on the intersection of I-25 and Colorado Boulevard, less than 6 miles from downtown Denver. In the largest new office transaction in Bergen County, New Jersey so far this year, Promotion in Motion, a manufacturer of fruit snacks, fruit rolls, confections, and other snack food products, has signed a 110,945-square-foot headquarters lease at 225 Bray Boulevard in Park Ridge, New Jersey. The Con-Am Group has acquired South Valley Ranch, a 292-unit apartment community in Henderson, Nevada, for $54.5 million. Built in 1997, South Valley Ranch is situated on 17.37 acres. Henderson's one of the fastest-growing communities in America. Newmark Knight Frank is announcing the firm's successful completion of the sale of a three-property portfolio of office and retail in Chicago's Fulton Market District. They didn't disclose the buyer. The portfolio totals about 77,000 square feet between three buildings. You're listening to the CRE News Hour from statebroadcastnews.com. The real estate industry landscape is continuing to evolve at a rapid pace if CRE companies want to remain competitive. As we head into 2020, it'll be critical for them to focus not just on location, 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 but also on the tenant experience. And one of the keys to focusing on the tenant experience is leveraging insights from data analytics and emerging technologies. Deloitte & Touche has just released its 2020 Commercial Real Estate Outlook, and joining us to talk about that outlook is Jim Berry. He is the U.S. real estate leader for Deloitte & Touche out of Dallas, Texas. Jim, thanks for joining us on the CRE News Hour.
Steve, thanks for having me today.
So it's an interesting report, and you've been doing this kind of report for several years, and there have been some changes in the perception of commercial real estate by institutional investors, particularly when it comes to the use of technology and analytics. Tell us a little bit about what you're finding.
Sure. And Steve, this year for our 2020 Deloitte Commercial Real Estate Outlook, we went ahead and took advantage of really where things are today, and we actually polled 750 global real estate owners, operators, investors, and really tried to cover a couple different things. As you just mentioned, we were really looking, you know, for insights from that group on how they were viewing technology, the enhancements that were occurring, and how they were adapting to some of that, which really drove us into the area of tenant experience. In addition, since we're going out to those 750 global owners and operators in real estate, we also just wanted to get their perception on the economy and how they were seeing things over the next 18 months. So maybe a couple of insights first off on the technology and how we're seeing real estate companies embrace that. As I just mentioned, when we looked at kind of some underlying themes that came out, is really this idea of tenant experience really came through loud and clear. And when we framed that up, we really said that when you really looked at some of the underlying data and how things are moving and evolving, the old adage of location, location, location being the primary driver for real estate has really evolved into where now it's location, experience, and analytics. And a great example of that is that 64% of those executives that we surveyed said they were going to continue to increase their investment in tenant experience technology. But an interesting stat on that, in contrast, there's only 46% that believe that's really part of their core competency. So a meaningful gap.
So what are the implications for property owners who are looking for investment in terms of how they deploy technology?
Yeah, there are several opportunities that really exist out there. And kind of continuing down that stream of the tenant experience and really the end user experience. You know, I've been in real estate now for about 35 years, and one of the great things about real estate is there has always been the opportunity to interact with the tenant and partner and team with them. But what we're really experiencing today is through the use of technologies, through the how and what data gathering and use of data really means, there's really increased opportunities to do even more from a partnering with the tenant and ultimately the end user. And that really has become more and more critical. And so when you look at it from the perspective of what are tenants valuing, they're really increasingly valuing that opportunity, the team differently with the real estate owner and operator. And the investors are really looking at it from the perspective of the wave of use of real estate as that continues to evolve and change, that, you know, they're looking for those owners, operators that they can invest in that are really embracing technology.
So you've got some examples in the report of some interesting approaches that people are taking. Can you talk about some of those examples, some of those cases?
Absolutely. So let's start with some things about that are already some examples that people are currently embracing and using. When you really break it down, you know, current examples of where people are focusing right now, a lot of it, I call it, you know, some of the basics. So environmental, so lights, heating, security has moved up quite a bit. But beyond just the basics of building security, it's really, once again, providing a 24/7 type of security for the individual tenant and user of the space. And then the other thing that's continuing to move up the scale is interactive and the use of mobile apps, Internet of Things, to really drive more and more of the tenant experience. So making the real estate itself be a real element of how the end user is actually experiencing things. Another area is in artificial intelligence. And it's interesting in that artificial intelligence is really moving up, has really evolved significantly over the last, really just few years. And, it's gone beyond machine learning to now it's deep learning, natural language processing. The technologies really just continue to evolve. And it's no longer technologies that are distant future. I mean, these are technologies that exist today that are very usable by all companies and real estate companies in particular. However, only 1/3 of CREs are really companies that we surveyed were actually using artificial intelligence. And those that were are still more or less using them in fairly traditional space. So once again, an opportunity area for people to look for new ways to expand on already existing technology.
Do you get a sense from them what it is that's holding them back from implementing these technologies?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. We mentioned last year, and actually even the year before, in our commercial and Deloitte's commercial real estate outlooks, that you know the time was really now. That real estate, while it's been a traditional lagging in the adoption of certain technologies, you know, it really needed to move forward aggressively. And we stated that point a couple years ago. We restated it last year. And we are clearly seeing some movement in those areas in a positive fashion and in sustained investment in technology. But it's really so, in answer to your question, part of it's just closing the gap. You know, there was a gap that was created and the need to accelerate in some of those investments and really embrace it. There's also just a natural, question of how do you allocate your capital? In a very capital-intensive in business, you know, it's really a question of what do you invest in, and is how important is it today to invest in that? And so there was some concern out there that you know technology wasn't fully there yet, that you know was it too early to jump in, some of those kinds of things. So I think that concern has really been somewhat alleviated over the last couple of years. So I'd say the combination of just a need to catch up and the second on, where and how to place your bets from a technology perspective.
So let's shift a little bit from the technology part of the study to your overall outlook for 2020. I guess based on looking at the report, your economists are concerned about volatility around the world and particularly some concerns about the U.S.-China relationship. Can you talk a little bit about those results?
As we came out with our Deloitte 2020 outlook, we really did want to also ask the question, with those 750 global real estate owners and operators, how are you feeling? And what we came, the end result of that is we say mixed but moderate optimism still exists. And just to throw out a couple statistics going across all the sectors and, that were included in the survey, 15% still remain very optimistic over the next 18 months and 61% somewhat optimistic. So still combined well over 70%. And the very or somewhat optimistic. However, in comparing that to the prior year, where in the 2019 Deloitte Outlook, we actually were on the other side of the table and exclusively surveyed 500 global investors. And at that time, 96% indicated that of those real estate investors that they would be at or increase their level of investment. So moderating optimism. So what's in play there? There's clearly concerns over some of the global influences, whether or not it's trade or whether or not it's Brexit or just the fact that there's still a lot of discussion. Wow, it's just been a really long cycle, and what is that really going to mean? But the fundamentals across real estate, commercial real estate in general, still remain strong, and that's the contrast. And that when you look at leasing activity, when you look at the overall financial picture, it still looks very optimistic overall. I will say that the feelings and the most concerns that people have right now, interest rates, geographic market risk, and tenant concentration remain the top three items that they're most focused on from a risk perspective.
I think one of the statistics I found really interesting is among the respondents geographically, the respondents in Hong Kong seem to have the strongest optimism for the markets, whereas in the very optimistic category, the United States was way down at about 20%, Hong Kong at 40%, both still positive. But, given what we see on TV and in the news about civil unrest and protests in Hong Kong, how do you account for the fact that they're still optimistic there, that they're not concerned about the civil unrest?
Yeah, Steve, and you're right. When you break it down into major geographic areas, it was Asia, led from the optimism scale, followed by North America, and then Europe. I do want to make sure it's clear, though, that when we did this survey, it was in June of 2019. So there was, you know, obviously some things happened since then in Hong Kong that could have impacted that. But still, overall, when you still look at it and the underlying things, even with that, with the unrest and the concerns that are happening globally, you know, there's still, you know, overall, when you look at those major geographic areas, Asia, North America, Europe, you know, that optimism seems to be still generally holding.
Talk about the challenges that people have with collecting data and analyzing data, and where does that fit into what they're spending their money on and where they're putting their attention?
This is really an area that's really evolving for commercial real estate companies. You know, the reality is there's enormous amounts of data, you know, that are available. And when you think about the increased use of other technologies, whether or not it's, you know, the technology is tied into the Internet of Things, mobile apps, all that goes in through the smart buildings and some of those kinds of things. Once again, a lot of data and opportunity for data, both structured and unstructured data. For most real estate companies, it's still very early stage, however. And there's a lot of questions that companies are really trying to deal with. Who owns the data? I mean, there's still a foundational question of who really owns the data. Is it the real estate company? Is it the tenant? And how's that really going to play out? It's also unclear on, you know, some of the regulatory landscape. You know, a good example of that being in the EU with the general data protection regulations that have come out and how that's going to weave in and play. But pushing through all of that, the reality is that data will continue to be a great opportunity for real estate companies. While they'll have to work through governance and structure and process and how best to handle that, enable it so that's to best enable capture, management, and usability of that, there's really an enormous opportunity. The other thing that's an interesting contrast, you know, when you grapple with some of the risk against, you know, tying back to the end user, the reality is tying into some of that data is really some of the things that can best drive that end user experience. And so I think the question now is not when or how to use data or that data is going to be a usable source, but really how best to use that and how to make sure you're setting up the governance and control structures so that you can, you know, weave your way through some of the risks that are involved with it.
So what are some of the things that your study recommends that people think about doing to digitize and personalize the tenant experience? Smart buildings are going to play a role in that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So, from a smart building perspective, you know, I think that's a great example of where things are going and heading and really where the expectations are. Back to that point we made about it's no longer location, 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 but it's location, experience, and analytics. And that experience piece really having an equal weight to the location. Look, location is always going to be important, but if you have a building that really can have, you know, offer the not just the amenities, but an overall experience and a usability and adaptability to anybody who's actually, you know, the end user that's experiencing that particular real estate, whether that's retail or office or multifamily, even industrial. I mean, that's really becoming more important. When you look at smart buildings, that's really interesting to go along the scale to say what is the tipping point from it's no longer going to be a nice to have or even an existing feature of that you're moving into, but rather it's an expectation. And once again, when you break it down geographically, you see across the world that really the Netherlands and Singapore and some of those areas are really saying that within the next 2 years, that well over 50% are going to really be required to do that. An interesting contrast to that is the U.S. respondents all believe that needed to occur as well. And being in the upper, high percentages, well over 70%, but within 5 years. So it'll be an interesting question on how to take existing buildings and really begin to continue to transform those and build what is becoming an ever-changing expectation of the end user.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it, and we thank you for taking the time, and we'll check back with you when you do the next survey.
Steve, thanks for including me on the CRE NewsHour.
Jim Berry is the U.S. real estate leader for Deloitte & Touche. He's headquartered in Dallas, Texas. And we'll put a link in the show notes to the full survey on the Deloitte website. We'll be back in a minute.
Shalom. This is Rabbi Richard Address. Join us for our podcast series from Jewish Sacred Aging entitled Seekers of Meaning. We'll explore some of the issues and events that impact ourselves, our families, and our Jewish world at large in light of the current revolution in aging.
The Seekers of Meaning podcast airs every Friday morning at 8 a.m. at JewishSacredAging.com. Can't wait for the media to cover your company. You have to be the media. Take advantage of the power of audio and video. It's the best way to showcase your expertise to prospective customers. Let the Lubetkin Media Companies handle the technical side. We're award-winning audio and video producers. We can help you produce podcasts and video programs remotely or in our fully equipped studio in Cherry Hill. Visit beingthemedia.com for more information. With 26 shopping days between Thanksgiving and Christmas, the shortest possible window, the 2019 holiday season is arriving early. The North Plainfield-based commercial real estate services firm Levin Management Corporation is once again surveying its retail tenants. It's the 8th annual pre-holiday retail sentiment survey, and the results show some strong optimism for the sales period between now and Christmas. In fact, 27.7% of the survey's respondents think their peak seasonal sales will come before Thanksgiving, and 28.5% expect their peak sales during Black Friday and Thanksgiving weekend. The statistics are mirrored industry-wide. Major retailers are launching their holiday sales and promotions even earlier than usual. And we spoke again with Levin Management Corporation's Chief Executive Officer, Matthew Harding, and Melissa Sievright, the Vice President of Marketing, to get a sense of what the results tell us about the retail environment for the holiday shopping season. Matt and Melissa, thanks for coming back to the CRE NewsHour to talk about the holiday season. And retail indications are that things are going to be good. Tell us a little bit about what you're finding.
Yes, we've just recently completed our survey of retailers in our over 100 property portfolio, and things are very positive. We have really kind of record highs in terms of expectations that our retailers have for the coming holiday season. And that's especially impressive because of really a five-year run here of similar numbers, similar feelings where each year is going to be better than the last, and really nearly an all-time record of our respondents indicated that they are going to have expect to have a better season this year than last. Nearly 88% of respondents anticipate that sales will meet or exceed last year's levels.
And last year was a pretty good year as well. People were pretty confident and sales were good.
It was. And over the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen that consistently. So I think general consumer confidence has remained strong. Employment levels have remained strong. And then also when we ask our retailers how they've done so far this year, they were all positive as well. So they're basing it, I think, upon expectations, but also on their track record for the first part of this year, which has seen strong sales and strong levels of traffic in the stores, of customer traffic in the stores.
So how does that play into the conventional wisdom, which is not always very wise, that retail is challenged because of the rise of e-commerce? And what does that tell us about what's really going on in retail when we look at places like traditional shopping malls, which are still, in some cases, seeing some challenges getting retailers leased up and getting the spaces occupied?
I'll speak first, and maybe Melissa can add to that as well. A couple of things. That one important thing, that another trend that we've seen over the last number of years, is that the holiday shopping season has broadened. It's not Black Friday to Christmas anymore. You start seeing Black Friday promotions and sales starting at the end of October, and a strong number of our retailers expect their peak sales to come early in the season. Nearly 30%, 28% of our respondents expect their peak seasonal sales to occur prior to Thanksgiving, and 29% really anticipate peak sales during the Black Friday Thanksgiving weekend. So really, they've expanded the season and front-loaded it, and that's especially important this year, where there are only 26 shopping days between Christmas and Thanksgiving, the shortest possible window. So they've mitigated their risk in a sense by broadening the holiday shopping season, and that's been a consistent trend that we've seen over the last number of years as well. And then they're doing all kinds of things in the stores and different ways to use technology and so forth to reach out to tenants. And Melissa can probably add a couple of points on that.
The brick and mortar retailers continue to look at different ways to differentiate themselves from the e-commerce and the other physical store competitors. A lot of that is, creating convenience, fluid checkout process, a well-trained and friendly salespeople. A lot of them are increasing salespeople. We see that 40% are at, for the full holiday period, nearly 40% of our participants, that are participants that, how do you say that? Sorry. That participate in our survey, nearly 40% are adding seasonal staff. And we've seen that with some of our big retailers like Target, who invested $50 million into their holiday payroll for more employees on floor. A lot of retailers are doing in-store experiences, in-store events to create a more pleasant shopping experience.
What's an in-store experience? What would be an example of that?
Maybe showing them how to set their table for Christmas, or different ways to entertain their guests. Different products that are new to the market and how to use them.
Are you getting a sense that the bricks and mortar retailers are getting more comfortable integrating technology, accepting the fact that people are going to walk around the store using a cell phone, a smartphone, to compare prices or compare products? Are they doing more to accommodate that?
Oh yes, you have to be able to accommodate the mobile devices, because people are looking at their phones and comparing pricing before they do checkout.
Are there any other unusual or new technology approaches that people are using that you've heard about?
A lot of the same, social media and text messaging. A lot of our participants have tried new first-time offerings this year. Nearly 30% reported they will be first using first-time offerings, such as entertainment or increased variety of products and services, and in-store pickup and returns for online purchases.
Yeah, I think that last one's a big one, just showing how bricks and mortar and e-commerce and an online presence of a retailer really have come together to work together to be as convenient as possible for the customer, whether they want to shop online strictly, shop in the store, or a combination of both. And we're seeing that across different types of retailers, you know, grocery to regular retailers and so forth. And then seeing not so much in the grocery end, but department store, electronics like Best Buy and so forth, getting incidental sales when the customer comes in to pick up an item. And that customer can have that item within a couple of hours, order it online, know that it's there in the store, go pick it up. So, you know, retailers from seeing e-commerce as a threat or technology, the successful ones have really merged that into their platform to reach their customer and serve their customers. And then also using technology to reach out to their customers to get them into the stores through some of the things that Melissa was talking about, pushing out coupons, pushing out ads, and so forth to their existing customers or potential customers.
You've been doing the survey since 2012. Aside from the fact that the season has seemed to have gotten longer, are there any other changes in the way people approach the holiday retailing season that you find are different from when you first started?
The first one is a big one. And then the use of technology. I think that we've seen more of our respondents say that they're using technology in one way or another. And then also with a little bit of a lag in timing from starting to use it, but then also really seeing results in the stores. So I would say that's an important trend that we've seen over time.
Now, you've been leasing space to retailers for a very long time. What kinds of things are retailers saying to you about their leasing strategies? What are the things that you as a property owner or representative of property owners have to accommodate in terms of the requests you get from people who are looking to lease space in one of your centers?
We are really trying to help our retailers be as successful as possible, obviously, in our properties, and more so seeing that as a partnership between a property owner and a retailer. So a number of things. We are modifying parking areas to help grocery stores put pickup or department stores put pickup spots, convenient pickup spots for customers who have ordered online and want to stop and pick up items or have someone from the store bring it out. We are renovating shopping centers to improve the experience for customers. We are also adding, modifying our lighting systems to LED to help push down common area costs. We are also, in certain circumstances, investing in helping retailers with technology by establishing websites for properties where retailers can come in and post ads that then can be, those ads can then be pushed out to people in the neighborhoods around the property, so to know that the retailer's there and to know what kind of sales or promotions are going on at the shopping center. So a whole host of different things that we're doing to try to help retailers be as successful in our properties and also set our properties apart from the competition, so to speak.
Any other tips for people about what to look for in the retail environment in the holiday season?
I would say that, you know, a number of different organizations are predicting 4.5-5% increase in sales this year. I have seen some notes saying that it's a good idea to get out there and shop early because the product or item that you want may not be there at the end of the season. So get out there and shop early, I would say.
Shop early and often.
Correct.
Matt Harding and Melissa Sievright, thanks very much for joining us on the CRE NewsHour, and happy holidays.
Thanks, Steve.
Happy holidays, Steve. Thanks so much.
Matthew Harding is the Chief Executive Officer, and Melissa Sievright is Vice President of Marketing for Levin Management Corporation. They spoke to us from their office in North Plainfield, New Jersey. And that'll do it for this week's edition of the CRE NewsHour. Don't forget to check out our audience survey by clicking on the purple Take the Survey button. below the podcast player on the show page for this episode. And please consider becoming a financial supporter of our podcast by clicking the Patreon button. If you have comments about our program or a story idea that you'd like to see us cover, send me an email. The address is steve@statebroadcastnews.com. You can also leave us an audio comment by using the voicemail feature on the right sidebar of our website at statebroadcastnews.com. We produce this show in the State Broadcast News studios in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. For everyone at the CRE News Hour and State Broadcast News, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.